You've tuned in to Naturopathic Earth Radio with certified health consultant and former obese child, A. Gregory Luna, where you get the latest on clean living, natural remedies, effective weight loss tips, and sound naturopathic principles from experts and biohackers from around the world and Gregory himself. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of the shackles of Big Food and start your journey now to a long, vibrant, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathic Earth.
Hello, everybody. This is A. Gregory Luna. Of course, you can call me Gregory, and welcome back to another episode of Naturopathy Earth Radio. I hope you're doing well. Today, let's get some housekeeping done before we talk about how Big Pharma has infiltrated our medical schools, which shouldn't be surprising to any of you. The website's naturopathicearth.com, naturopathicearth.com. Honestly, just Google NPE Radio and I'll get you there. Check out all the articles we have, the recipes, essential oil recipes, the Twitter feed, and all the hundreds of articles that I have written in the last year or so. A lot of things are covered there that are not covered on the twice weekly podcast, so go over there. I also am a certified paleo-inspired health coach. If you need some help losing weight, contact me through the site, and maybe I can help you with that with my plan. Also, we have a crowdfunding account through Patreon. Click on the links on this episode notes, and it'll take you there, or just go to the website, and there's links everywhere there if you want to donate a dollar or so a month to help defray the costs of the podcast and of the website. Also, next week, we will be doing the next raffle for a free consultation. Amanda won the last one, so we'll be pulling names out of new subscribers. And it's not just new subscribers of the last 2 weeks. It's going to be the subscribers of the last 2 months. We keep you in a pool. And hopefully one of you will win, and you'll get to talk to me, and we'll get to chit-chat, practicar, charlar, as they say in Spanish. And we'll talk about that. All right. That's all I got to say. Let's get to med school. Okay. So some of you might be asking, you know, Gregory, why'd you choose this topic for MPE 110? I can't believe we have 110 episodes. It's amazing. You know the kind of the running theme, like the early maybe 40 episodes were mostly about clean eating and talking about certain toxins in the food. And then I went to toxins and cancer causers that are in the house and in the makeup and plastics and all that. If you notice the last 30 or 40, it's more about whistleblowing. I like to whistleblow because I just like to bring information and knowledge to you guys that you might not know about. And there's only so much about nutrition you can talk about. And honestly, there's so many podcasts by better quality, better presenters than I am that you can go to. And I'm not being self-effacing or a humble brag, but certainly there's better podcasts than mine on that. But I like to stick to whistleblowing and exposés because I don't think that outlet is there as much. And honestly, I just find it more interesting. If it was up to me, I'd just do a medical conspiracy show every day. But you know how much I hate Big Pharma. And the irony is my brother, if you listen to the Confessions of an Obese Child episode 19, but the popular brother, my middle brother actually is a pharmaceutical manager. He worked his way up. Soon out of college, he was a pharmaceutical rep, and he was very successful. And the last 20 years, he's worked his way up, and now he manages a region, and he's got hundreds of people under him. And I guess it's kind of ironic, right? One son of a doctor ends up being anti-Big Pharma, and one son promotes it hardcore. And that's not to say, guys, I'm not completely against pharmaceutical drugs. As you know, and if you don't know, go to the mission statement on the website. I am more against using drugs as the first line of defense for things. And a lot of that kind of sick care system mentality we have, that paradigm, it's so pervasive. You see it as soon as you walk into a doctor's office, right? Like, oh, what are your symptoms? You know, in that whole whopping 9-minute visit that you get in the typical American office. It's almost like going to a psychiatrist, right? It's like they're not even listening. They already kind of have an idea what they think you have, and they're already thinking in their head which drug they're going to prescribe, and then they're already thinking about what they're going to eat for lunch before they see the next three patients in 9 minutes. So it's all about using drugs to, quote, treat the problem. And a lot of these underlying problems can be treated without drugs, and almost all drugs have side effects, so let's avoid them. But I wanted to do this article because I thought, I wanted to show you how it starts early on. And you know, they always say is get the kids when they're young, because if you can indoctrinate and propagandize them at a very, very young age, they think whatever distorted view you taught them is the only and right true view. Now, I could give you some examples that could offend some of you because you might actually believe in these views, but I won't. I'll stick to something like as more benign as perhaps as, going back to population control. Go back to that classic episode. It's one of my most downloaded episodes, actually. I think people who disagree with me probably listen to that episode, or people who are just naturally curious. But the whole idea of overpopulation being a complete myth, you know, we're taught that at such a young age that people are shocked when they hear the truth about it. You could say the same thing about maybe global warming, but I don't want to offend my listeners who are like, what are you talking about, Gregory? Global warming, we're causing that. That's why I switched to my Prius, and that's why I switched to my smart car, because my one SUV is polluting the world and it's going to cause, you know, Armageddon or the apocalypse. Either way, we're going to glean off of a NPR. My sister, my doppelganger organization, not MPE radio, but NPR radio, and talk about this article. It's called The Pharmaceutical Industry's Role in U.S. Medical Education. All right. In 1993, the Joint National Committee on Prevention, Detection, Evaluation, and Treatment of High Blood Pressure concluded that diuretics and beta blockers are the preferred choice for initial hypertension drug therapy because they've been shown to reduce cardiovascular morbidity, that's disease, and mortality, death, in controlled clinical trials. Surprisingly, between 1992 and 1995, prescriptions for diuretics decreased by 50% and for beta blockers by nearly 40%. On the other hand, prescriptions for calcium channel blockers, a heavily promoted, expensive, newly developed hypertension treatment, rose by 13%. Why are these more expensive, possibly inferior drugs being prescribed instead of clinically recommended evidence-based medications? What do you think? Let's find out. One reason is that during this time, the pharmaceutical industry spent more than $14 billion marketing their products in the form of samples, direct mailing, and pharmaceutical representative consultations. The industry has been criticized for its marketing practices. I love how it's criticized, but no one does anything about it. With marketing expenditures nearly double that of research and development costs at three of the largest U.S. pharmaceutical manufacturers. That's why it's such BS. It's like, here at GlaxoSmithKline, we are working hard to learn, you know, find a drug for the cure of fill in the blank, when they're spending three times as much money on the marketing. So it's all about the moolah. It's always about the moolah. Everything is about the moolah. The industry spends at least $5 billion annually on marketing, which is more than $8,000 per doctor. This marketing effort directly affected physicians, enticing them to prescribe the latest pharmaceuticals. Not surprising. Though not obvious, the relationship between physicians and pharmaceutical industry begins long before doctors have the power to prescribe medications. It starts when they are estudiantes en la escuela de medicina. Medical students are subjected to a barrage of advertising that inevitably leads to a physician-industry connection that can be harmful to our healthcare system. Medical students' exposure to pharmaceutical marketing begins early, growing in frequency throughout their training. Students receive gifts such as free meals, textbooks, pocket texts, small trinkets, and even drug samples. I love small trinkets, like they're Native Americans in 1860 Wyoming. 40 to 100% of medical students report exposure to pharmaceutical industry, with clinical students being more likely than preclinical students to report exposure. That makes sense because that's near the end of their training. I love this stat there, 40 to 100%. The number of students recalling over 20 exposures to marketing rose from 33.3% to nearly 72% as students entered their clinical training. Pharmaceutical companies, recognizing the formative nature of the clinical years of medical education, yeah, they're not stupid, seek to form relationships with medical students years before they're ready to independently practice medicine. Of course, get them while they're young. Hook them while they're young. Just like vaping and cigarettes and drinking, right? Get the kids hooked on them when they're 13, right? That impressionable age, and then they're hooked forever. Just like how they get kids hooked on fast food at age 5. My freaking 3-year-old son drive by a McDonald's sign. I'm in Diane, Yeah, but I show him a picture of Jesus Christ. He would have no idea who Jesus Christ is. And that's partly my fault. But my point is that Disney and fast food do such a great job of propagandizing that kids recognize their symbols and logos better than they do of other more important things. These interactions intensify through a physician's training, ranging from trivial gifts such as pens and pads, right, with the name of the drug on it, to more questionable large honoraria and consulting fees. Some resident physicians report an average of 6 pharmaceutical gifts annually, up to 70 industry-sponsored lunches, and nearly 75 promotional items in 1 year. And a survey showed that 41% of emergency medicine departments allow their residents to be taught by drug company representatives. Drug company representatives. So they're being taught. They're being taught by doctors. Typically, it's doctors that are going to work for a pharmaceutical company. I've mentioned this in a past episode. So they'll get some doctor, hey, we got some new drug. You know, will you pimp this drug out? And the doctor's like, eh, I don't know. We'll pay you, you know, whatever amount if you go around the country pimping this drug out to med schools. Okay. You know, they're like, yeah, you pay me enough. Okay. You know, I'll just turn a blind eye if there's any studies showing that it might not be that good for us. But I'll just, for sure. So these doctors come and speak at medical schools, and the impressionable medical students, these malleable young little guppies, have no idea who's backing these up. It's not like most of the time there's this gigantic banner behind them saying, sponsored by Merck. You know, so you think these doctors are just presenting the newest drug or whatever, and you don't know how they've been bribed. As medical students are increasingly subjected to pharmaceutical marketing throughout their education, their skepticism towards the practices of the pharmaceutical industry gradually diminishes. Right? Of course. Multiple studies report a relationship between exposure to the pharmaceutical industry and positive attitudes about industry interactions. Of course. Because we can all be bought out. As students' exposure to the pharmaceutical industry increases, their ability to determine industry bias decreases. I mean, that's like confirmation bias kind of stuff too, right? It's like when you talk about 9/11 conspiracies or medical conspiracies or whatever, any of these school shooting conspiracies, people don't want to believe that other people or our leaders are capable of pure evil. And so we rationalize and bury our head in the sand. So you can see these medical students and their discernment to determine how biased the medical school education is toward big pharma decreases because they don't want to know because they enjoy getting all the gifts and the trinkets like they're Native Americans. And losing their ability to detect and bias and analyze pharmaceutical marketing statements objectively, medical students hinder their future ability to practice evidence-based medicine. Pharmaceutical industry influence can harm the social and moral character of students. Yeah. In medicine, the traditional virtues of benevolence, which is kindness, compassion, feeling for other people's issues, integrity, I don't know what that is because it's gone, respectfulness, honesty, and justice are valued over commitments to money, power, and self. Medical school seeks to impart these values, hoping to train doctors that act morally in their profession. Okay, first of all, okay, well, let me finish. When a pharmaceutical representative gives a gift to a student, the student either feels indebted or entitled. If a student feels indebted, they are likely to alter their future prescribing habits based on industry recommendations, impairing their ability to practice medicine in an unbiased manner. If a student does not feel indebted, they are in danger of developing an unwarranted sense of entitlement. Fine et al., that's a study by Fine, found out that nearly 1/3 of students at UCLA Med School thought that a drug company should pay the cost of printing notes for them. And almost half the students felt that a meal, textbook, and paid travel to a conference were appropriate gifts. A something-for-nothing experience has created a sense of entitlement among these future physicians. Okay, look, going back to medical school seek to impart these values of benevolence, compassion, integrity, respect. Okay, true. But look, most of the people that go to med school go because they want to help people, kind of like how lawyers ostensibly go into law school because they want to help people. But really, it goes back always to the Moloch. It's always, I almost said Moloch. So if you know anything about Bohemian Grove, you know, I'll talk about the what is it, the Philistine owl god Moloch, how he used to sacrifice children to them back in the biblical eras. And some would say still now at the Grove, but Moloch. So people go into med school to make money. Sure, they might have some, oh, I want to help people, but it's mostly to make money. That's why they go into med school. So yeah, I mean, come on. But, you know, fine. If they want to impart these, you know, inculcate into them, you know, virtues of benevolence, compassion, integrity, the kids probably need it. But they want to make money. As medical students become physicians, the physician-pharmaceutical industry interaction becomes increasingly linked and affects the prescribing habits of physicians. On one hand, physician-industry interactions help keep physicians informed about the latest drugs, which can be invaluable as the pace of scientific discovery can exceed dissemination of application information. Well, you know, the pace of scientific discovery could go faster if we didn't spend three times the amount Big Pharma does on marketing than it did in R&D. Why don't we spend more of that money in R&D and these scientific discoveries would come a lot quicker? But again, they care more about the money. On the other hand, the industry-physician relationship has many negative consequences. In a review of 16 studies, interactions with the pharmaceutical industry led to physicians being more likely to request the addition of company drugs to the hospital formulary and to prescribe the company's medications over generic drugs. Again, it's not surprising. These changes resulted in the use of medications that were costly and had no therapeutic advantage over older ones. Yeah, but they make the big pharma companies richer. Medicine relies on objective evidence. And the pharmaceutical industry's influence underlies the shortcutting of this essential process. Another negative consequence of the physician-industry interaction is the faltering credibility of the medical profession. Weber et al., that study, report that some schools have strict policies regarding faculty-industry relationships, but fail to enforce them. Because later on, you'll learn that med schools are getting money from pharmaceutical companies. For example, Stanford University banned physicians from giving paid promotional talks for pharmaceutical companies. Yet more than a dozen of the school's doctors were paid speakers, with two earning more than six figures during these speaking appointments. Just the speaking, they're getting six figures. The American College of Physicians, God, if Kate was listening to this, she knows that's my word, I can't pronounce it. There's like, how many times have I had to say that word? Like 10 times already? The American College of Physicians noted, quote, a perception that a physician is dispensing medical advice on the basis of a commercial influence is likely to undermine a patient's trust, not only in the physician's competence, but also in the physician's pledge to put the patient's welfare above self-interest, close quote. If the patient begins to view physicians as being tainted by industry influence, then the public's entire faith in the medical system could be eroded. In order to prevent our future physicians from becoming puppets of the pharmaceutical industry, well, I think they're most are unknowing puppets, but certainly some are puppets, as we've already talked about how they get paid for doing these tours. And you know, in the old days, I mean, if a drug rep came to you, I'm like, hey, Dr. X, if you write, you know, whatever, 50,000 scripts for blah, 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 we'll send you over to the Bahamas. I mean, that's how they used to do it in the old days. Or you'd sleep with the pharmaceutical reps. I mean, there was just so much abuse, even like 20, 30 years ago, but definitely, you know, 40, 50 years ago. Woodford et al., another study, devised a 90-minute workshop which aims to increase student knowledge and awareness about pharmaceutical company representatives' marketing techniques, address appropriate interactions with the PCRs, the marketing techniques, and discuss the ethical issues surrounding the marketing techniques. After the workshop, students' perception of the degree of pharmaceutical company representative influence on prescribing habits increased from 42% to 61%. That's great. We just need more med schools doing that. The pharmaceutical industry and the medical field are inextricably entangled. One creates the necessary medications, and the other delivers the medications to patients in need. Driven by capitalism, the pharmaceutical industry exerts an influence over medical students, creating an atmosphere in which students come to value the industry's input in patient care that can lead to patient and societal harm. In order to counteract this influence, medical education must reform to help students react to these issues. All right. This was from a contributing editor who is a medical student at UC Irvine called Priscilla Q. View. Priscilla, the letter Q dot Vu, but that's a good name. Priscilla Q. View. I like that name. All right. So look, let's cover the next one. Then we'll cover this. Okay, so let's actually talk about grants that are given by Big Pharma to medical schools here. This is another article from NPR. Now, this is dated from 2005, so it is quite old, but I'm assuming, honestly, nothing has changed since then. The other article I read was only from last year, but this one, of course, is a little older, and I expect the numbers that are quoted in this to have drastically gone up. But okay, this is from NPR, too. An informal survey of medical schools by NPR found that some schools rely on funding from pharmaceutical and other health industry sources. The issue is taking on increasing importance. Government funding for medical research is not expected to increase in coming years, okay, and could decline. Medical schools will be more reliant on private, for-profit industry for funding. That raises questions about academic freedom and restriction on what researchers can and cannot say in print and in public. An informal survey was done by searching financial information on the internet and through phone interviews. It found that between 2 and 16% of medical schools' yearly budgets come from the drug industry. And I'm going to quote these numbers later on. To illustrate how valuable this financing can be to some schools, consider the University of Oklahoma Health Sciences Center. The Oklahoma facility is a medium-sized medical school with two campuses, one in OKC and one in Tulsa. It has 584 students back in 2004. About 13% of the medical school's budget came from the industrial pharmaceutical sources in fiscal 2003. Drug giants such as AstraZeneca gave $1 million, Merck gave $800,000, Novartis gave $677,000, and Farmacia and Upjohn gave $591,000. There were 183 industrial pharmaceutical grants that year, totaling $13.8 million. More than half of the medical school's budget came from federal sources in fiscal 2003. All right. It received $58 million from National Institute of Health and other federal agencies. But even that money from the NIH, I mean, we would have to track that money to see what big pharma connections are to those grants. Still, the money from the drug industry is valuable to the medical center. Of course it is. I mean, it's 16%. It's an important consideration financially, but it's not critical, says Joseph Weiner, vice president of research at the Oklahoma facility. Losing a grant would mean some juggling, but there are many sources for private funding in medical research, he says. Grants are used to supplement faculty incomes, pay for technical support, and other research necessities. Like, why isn't the question by this Dr. Joseph Weiner to say, like, hey, maybe it's a conflict of interest that we shouldn't be receiving essential bribes from these pharmaceutical companies because it's always quid pro quo, right? Just like I talked about in the previous article. These places are not giving you money just to give you money. They're giving you money at least for the marketing and the presence on these medical schools, if not for the guest speakers and other things. So why not just extricate yourself from that temptation, just don't accept the money. But of course, that's just a Pollyanna view that I have. Warner says some faculty members do feel pressure to keep their funders happy. So-called clinical faculty, quote-unquote, are doctors who have busy practices and see a lot of patients, but they can't engage in research full-time like research faculty can. They want to continue to participate in research, so they seek out and accept offers of funding from drug companies for studies, speeches, and other services. Weiner says that this pharmaceutical funding, quote, makes valuable research protocols that wouldn't be available otherwise to patients, close quote. An NPR study about Merck's influence over independent doctors and medical schools, reporter Snigdha Prakash details how one drug company applied pressure to censor a critic of a popular painkiller. A former Merck employee at the center of the story, Dr. Lewis Sherwood, made phone calls to the department heads at various medical schools, complaining about faculty members who were critical of Vioxx. Oh, Vioxx. We've mentioned Vioxx before. Vioxx ended up killing 50,000 Americans, which is the same amount that killed, that died in the Vietnam War and in the Korean War. Sherwell told NPR in an interview that no threats were ever made to cut off funds and influence a person's academic position. Yeah. But whether threats are made in these situations, academics do feel pressure. Quote, "The problem is that faculty, particularly the kind of faculty we're talking about here, don't have tenure," says Lisa Barrow, a researcher at the University of California, San Francisco. "They don't have security of employment. They're more in a junior position, which is very vulnerable to influence from their department chair. It's very tenuous." Exactly. They could lose their job. Oh, so they could potentially lose their job, lose their employment, she told Prakash. "Or if they don't, their life can be made quite miserable in terms of receiving adequate research space and not receiving administrative support or something like that." Warner Warner of OUHCS, the Oklahoma Medical School, says it's important for the deans of medical schools and department heads not to let that happen. Quote, "You have to create an atmosphere to give support to the junior faculty so they can refuse to go along," close quote. "If a company makes an unacceptable demand," he says, "faculty should understand that saying no won't result in adverse consequences." Yeah, okay. "Though our survey could not establish a full scope of industry funding at medical schools, it's important to note that some institutions get very little money from the industry. Washington University over in St. Louis, for example, ranks second in federal health funding, but only gets 2% of its budget from drug makers and other industry sources." Okay, so I have a little table, and I'm going to just tell you how much money these medical schools are getting from Big Pharma. Not from particular big pharma companies, but just overall. So Dartmouth, I think, is in New Hampshire, $5 million. Indiana University, $34 million. Medical University of South Carolina, $23 million. Oregon Health Sciences University, $18 million. Good old Penn State, land of Paterno, $13.5 million. Stanford, $29 million. Now, that's horribly a lot, but their total grants that are not from Big Pharma is $336 million. God, Stanford, Jesus. University of Oklahoma is $13 million. University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine, which is Penn, that's an Ivy League school, $44 million. University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center, that's over in Dallas, $20 million. Washington University, $8 million. So let's finish out this episode. So clearly I am pretty heated up about this stuff. This is what I would like to see at medical schools. Why can't we just teach these young fledgling 23-year-old kids? Why can't we just teach them more botanical science, more nutrition? I mentioned in that episode way back when I think I was talking to Dr. Knighton, who's a naturopathic doctor, that most medical schools only have one semester in clinical nutrition. One semester out of 4 years. One semester. So let's ratchet up. This is my humble opinion. What do I know? Let's just ratchet up the clinical nutrition. Let's ratchet up the botanical sciences. So the herbs, you know, because most big pharma drugs originally came from active ingredients in plants. I mean, that's where you had apothecaries. Go read Outlander. I'm reading Outlander, you know, back in 18th century France, back in 9th century Italy. I mean, that's what we use. We use herbs. We use flowers and so forth. Now, of course, they weren't always effective. And a lot of them were just total bunk and BS. But our active drugs, like aspirin, comes from the willow, and we know that morphine, despite its issue, all the opioid drugs come from the poppy seeds. So let's ratchet up the botanical science, let's ratchet up the nutrition, and let's keep teaching pharmacology, but let's just not let big pharma in the medical schools in any way, shape, or form, in any form of gifts, bribing, even having their signs everywhere and giving out free pens. Let's just ban them from med schools. But of course, talk about the generics of particular drugs and what they can be used, and of course, the side effects of those particular drugs. Because we want our medical students, our future doctors, to be very educated in pharmacology. I'm not denying that. But I think there is a fine line where we can teach them those things without big pharma getting their grubby hands on these impressionable kids at such a young age. Let's wait till after they graduate for that to happen. Like in high schools, for example, we don't allow recruiters to just roam the hallways. We don't allow, of the armed forces, we don't allow them to roam the hallways and have tables and all these things every day. We don't allow that. Like, we don't want that. We don't want undue influences on the kids. We don't allow any of those influences. And this is actually what those few times are actually backing up public education. And at least in my district, they don't allow that. And that's good. So why can't we do that for medical school? But again, this is the Pollyanna view. If you are giving $44 million to a medical school, again, it's like, we just gave you this money. We'll take it away from you. Oh, we need that money. We need that money. And so these medical school deans allow it. And I'm sure if you look into the research, a lot of these board of directors at medical schools, if not the presidents of these medical schools, I swear to you, revolving door, I swear to you, at least half of any given med school, its board of directors is going to have somebody with connections, prior connections, or current connections to pharmaceutical companies. That's how it works. I just need to do an episode on the revolving door. The revolving door between big pharma, big business, Monsanto, the CDC, the FDA, and just show you how corrupt our quote-unquote watchdog organizations are. Because they all have conflict of interest. All of them. But look at the board of directors. I'm sure they're all tainted with big pharma. The other thing is, let's get rid of drug advertisements on television. Oh my God, that is one of the worst things. When I was a kid, they didn't allow that. Now they do. And of course, you know, it's a free world, free country. You know, if a company wants to advertise, let's put it on the TV. And so now these people are like, oh, look, they go to the doctor. Oh, doctor, I saw a commercial for Viagra, you know, and I have erectile dysfunction. Or I saw a commercial for Wellbutrin and I'm depressed. How does that drug work? So it's like even if for some great, great utopian lost horizon world that our medical students and then our doctors are not corrupted by big pharma, made biased by them at an early age, you just have the pressure coming from the bottom, from the patients asking for drugs. It's just like when you're a teacher, you get pressure from two camps. Admin is putting heat on you, and then parents are putting heat on you. So it's the same thing here. Even if you could eliminate the doctors from not being so bought out by big pharma, the patients are bought off on their own way by big pharma, by all the incessant ad nauseum commercials. And then you're going to be like, oh, it's a free country, it's capitalism. They can have commercials that they want. No, sir. Who doesn't have commercials on television? Or who doesn't have commercials on print? Cigarette companies don't. We've banned cigarette commercials. We've banned those. So why can't we big pharma? Oh, because it's for our health. Yeah, because big TV has been bought out too, and they're not going to deny money. Big pharma's octopusy tentacles are so big that they have their tentacles everywhere, and including television and television advertising. So is a television channel really going to pull commercials and risk losing all that advertising revenue? Hell no. So we're just in a bind. We're just in a bind because the pattern at med school is not going to change. Big pharma is still going to influence the medical students with bribes, and it's still going to bribe the actual medical schools, and the board of directors are still going to be big pharma revolving door people, and we're not going to get rid of the commercials. So you're going to have people begging and pleading for drugs. So what can we really do? Just increase awareness of holistic and naturopathic remedies. I think that's the only thing. Enough people hopefully because we don't want this, will have enough side effects from the most common of the pharmaceutical drugs, which would be like antidepressants and anti-anxiety drugs and heartburn drugs and antibiotics, and that the people will be like, and they'll do some research, it's just a modicum of research, and they'll be like, oh, damn, this isn't good for me. Let me look up natural remedies for blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And it's got to be a grassroots effort. That's the only way I see us getting around the evil corporations, Dr. Evil's corporations, and Big Pharma, and then all their lackeys in the government that are watching over them, not really watching over us. And so it's just like Austin Powers and Dr. Evil. They're all like laughing. There's that group shot with number two and Dr. Evil, and then the lady, and they're all like with their fingers up and they're laughing together. That's what it's like. So I don't know how we're going to get around this aside from just awareness. And I'm not naive enough to think that this is sufficient. We're going to continue going down this road 10, 15 years from now. We're going to have more people hooked on Big Pharma drugs, because as a whole, and I don't mean this to be offensive to anyone listening, but we are sheeple. We are truly sheeple. And if television tells us, or if daddy tells us, or if anybody in authority tells us, or if a teacher tells us, we believe it. We don't practice discernment anymore. And we're too lazy. We can spend 4 hours on social media going through our Instagram or Snapchat or Facebook thread, but we can't spend 4 hours investigating and looking up a drug that we're taking currently, like birth control pills. Like, how many women are on birth control pills? Let's go back to that episode on hormonal contraceptives. How many women are on it? And what percentage of those women know about the increased links in strokes, in weight gain, in sexual dysfunction, in breast cancer? Very little. So, I mean, we can blame Big Pharma, but a lot of it falls on us stupid, ignorant sheeple that we are. If you are putting something in your mouth, have some freaking self-respect and look it up and find out what are the side effects. Invest some time in your freaking health. Is not your body worth that? Is not your child worth that? Is not your spouse worth that? Last thing, please subscribe to this podcast. It just takes you 2 seconds to do it. And as always, post a review for this podcast. If you think that I rant and I'm belittling, by all means, put 1 star if you like and say that. But please post a review for MP Radio, Confessions of an Obese Child, or Kate's Apothecary. Until next time, guys, take care. God bless. Bye-bye.
Earth Radio. Visit us at www.naturopathicearth.com. Follow us on Twitter at Naturopath Earth, and subscribe to us on iTunes. Don't forget to leave a review. And remember our core belief at naturopathicearth.com. Let food be thy medicine. Let nature be thy healer. See you next time. Music courtesy of Art of Escapism.